think Tevez going to Juventus, what a coup that was for me. I mean,
on a head-to-head battle, Atletico Madrid can do more damage to Barcelona than the other way around.
Either he's really blind, or he's fixing the match. I can't see it any other way.
I'm trying to get Sir Bob on my side here by saying City will win the Premier League.
It is an upset. You would expect Man United to go and win there.
Over $1 billion was paid in transfer fees between the clubs in Europe.
It's football. It's damn football. Like Ferguson said, football. Bloody marvellous.
Yeah, well, the celebration was, I can't believe I just scored against Mexico.
At one point, Parma, I think it's only like 224 players under contract.
So they're going to throw me out of here, fellas. You're going to get me arrested on your show.
If you're a serious talent, you're going back and you're playing for Santos. You know, you're going back to play for, like in Argentina, for River Plate or Boca Juniors. Or you're going to Europe.
He looked like the Ryan Giggs of old. He was more creative than any player on the pitch. He made Mata look stupid. He made Rooney look silly.
Now, the Premier League is the most exciting league out there. I think it's probably the best marketed league without a question.
When you look at the draw for the Champions League, you kind of say, well, all the pieces kind of fell into place for everybody except City.
I am your host, Joe Uccello.
Sir Bob, Mike Orr. My co-host, Rob Rojas.
My trusted co-host, Ben the Machine.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to episode 214 of Low Limit Football on this 13th of August, 2018. I'm your host, Joe Uccello, and tonight we're going to look back at the transfer window with the big moves such as Keita Balde, Arturo Vidal, Yerry Mina, and Nikola Kalinic. Are there any big moves left to be made? We kicked off week one in England and France with exciting goals, big wins, and statement play from many of the top teams. And in the EPL, we saw debuts of managers including Maurizio Sarri at Chelsea, Unai Emery at Arsenal, and Manuel Pellegrini at West Ham. How did they do? We're going to ask this question and many, many more with our very special guest, Olivia Buzaglo from Premier League Productions, who will be returning to the show tonight in just about 15 minutes. But before that, I'd like to get in my co-host, who has returned from a great trip to London and France and Nice, Mr. Roberto Rojas. Did you work out that deal for Mario Balotelli to move back to Serie A?
No, unfortunately, I didn't. And you know what's the sad part as well is that I tried to negotiate my pass to PSG, but, you know, Nasir Al-Khelaifi just shut the window because they thought Timothy Weah was a better American. And I thought Monaco would be good enough for me to be able to, you know, resort myself into the lifestyle of Monte Carlo. But unfortunately, they said that I already got someone in the name of Alexander Gogovin. And, you know, in London, I mean... You don't even want to start with the negotiations I had with Arsenal and Chelsea. But no, it was great. I had a wonderful time in Europe. It was my first time there. You know, certainly when you immerse yourself into a new continent, to a new country, and essentially a new city, you know, you don't know what to expect. You have all these expectations from what you see there, here in the States at least. And then when you go there, I mean, it was wonderful. I mean, honestly, I couldn't have thought of a better time to have gone. You know, everything was perfect. I did meet some friends. For people that aren't following me on Twitter or Instagram or any of my social media, you can see that. For me, I thought it was 100% perfect, and I would love to go back very, very soon.
I told you to hire Mino Raiola as your manager.
Ooh, it's hard, man. You know, he wants a hard bargain. But you know what, Joe? Maybe you can help. I mean, you're supposedly helping me at this point, aren't you?
That's right. Yeah. So, I'm gonna go with you. Mm-hmm. And we're going to work out the deal, and I'll make sure you take the penalties at PSG. How's that?
Okay, and I would also hope that it would also have to be settled with a good bottle of wine. What do you recommend for these type of negotiations?
Oh, I mean, Chateau Latour, right? I mean, we're going to France. We might as well take one of the best Bordeaux you can find, so Latour would be the one for me. Mm. You know, but I don't make enough money to buy a bottle of Chateau Latour, so we better really work on that contract, man. But welcome back home, man. You know, obviously, you didn't miss a whole heck of a lot, and being over in France and in England, you were immersed in it anyway. So I'm sure you caught any of the deals that happened. You know, what kind of football banter did you get while you were over there?
You know what? I think for me, at least in France, I think the whole impression for me was that people were absolutely joyous. You know, ever since they won the World Cup just about a month ago, I think it really saw a bunch of people just very happy. You know, I didn't see a lot of negativity. I think people were just happy to help out all the tourists, be it from outside of France or anywhere else. You know, what I was able to see, at least in the countries that I've went, and at least in France, you know, is the amount of stuff that they sell on the streets. I mean, you go to a Paris shop, and it's not just the typical Paris tourist stuff in jackets, shirts, or anything like that, but you have PSG merchandise there. You go to Nice, and you see people and kids with Nice jerseys and Nice shirts. You go to Monaco, you see kids with AS Monaco shirts. You go to London, you see kids of every or adults with every kind of shirt, not just Arsenal, Chelsea, Spurs, West Ham, or any of the other clubs here in London. I mean, certainly it was amazing. I think it's completely different than what you see here in the United States. But for me, you know, you did kind of see much of it there, and you know, it was great because it kind of reminded me of what you kind of see in, you know, the soccer hard countries like, you know, Paraguay or Brazil or Argentina. That it kind of reminded me of that. So yeah, no, that was really the one of the few takeaways that I take from that trip.
Excellent, excellent. Let's get to work then. Let's do the trivia tonight. And it was your honor, but since you're on vacation, it's kind of hard to have to research all that stuff. So I'm taking the honor from you tonight. You can have it next time when we get back after my vacation. So, the information for this comes from Footy Room. And the way the question reads is, since the 2007-2008 season, can you name the top four players that have scored the most free kicks in the top five leagues and Champions League combined? So, 2007-2008, top four players that have scored the most free kicks in the top five leagues and Champions League combined.
Well, I got two off the bat.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure these are the two obvious ones.
Right.
And the
again,
other two are hard.
And again, my information's from Footy Room, so, you know, if I'm wrong, we'll blame it on them.
Right, well, it's alternative facts, isn't it?
Exactly. Great term, man. Great term. Let's get into opening thoughts tonight. And this opening thoughts actually came from... It was kind of a question that I was asked when I was on TalkSport last week, which, by the way, you and I have both been on TalkSport a few times each. For me, huge, huge, huge honor. I listen to TalkSport during the day when I'm driving around for work. And just the idea that they've reached out to you or reached out to me to contact us to come on the show is just – it's a huge honor, and I can't say enough about that. But this is a question that came up on TalkSport, and I thought it was a great question and elicited some thought for me. The transfer window is staggered when it closes, and this is the topic. The transfer window closes is staggered. So England closed August 9th. The Serie A closes August 17th. La Liga, Ligue 1, and the Bundesliga all close on August 31st. Is there an advantage or a disadvantage to the leagues and the teams because of the closing of the transfer window? Now, keep in mind, in England, players can still move out, but nobody can move in. So that allows for players to be loaned out to other places. So you'll see some quote-unquote moves. But let's say Man United can no longer chase Luka Modric, okay? That can't happen anymore. They can't bring him in. So, Rob, I want to throw it to you. Is it an advantage or a disadvantage, depending on where you stand, and why do you feel that way?
Well, I'll go from the two stances. I'll start with the advantage. I think when you look at the advantages, at least from an England perspective, it is the first time that they're doing this, because I believe that, you know, they're doing this right when the season is about to start, you know, August 9th, and the season started, I believe, the day after, if I'm not mistaken. So certainly it's a new thing. Obviously, we don't know what it could imaginatively, you know, turn out to be. We don't know what it could end up like. But certainly I think the advantage is trying to get the team already filtered in properly, that you don't see in the final few days of August where you're trying to get those last minute deals and where a team gets incredibly, you know, dysfunctional and, you know, have to start again from scratch because of a certain player or players leaving or entering the team. So I like that. And I think it kind of gives England the advantage of them trying to really get a team, you know, properly well, without trying to get other players from other leagues. The disadvantage, of course, for them is to the advantage of the other four leagues that you mentioned, La Liga, Liga, Bundesliga, and Serie A. Of course, it is, you know, staggered between all the four other leagues. You know, Serie A starts on they end on the 17th, you know, and the other three in Spain, Germany, and France all end on the last day, which is, you know, the norm I would say, in all of Europe, at least prior to this year. You know, it's certainly an advantage for them because they could still poach some of the best players in the world, you know, and rightly so. I think it all comes down to what their performances would be in the Champions League, in those respective leagues, you know, that kind of thing. For me, at least, it was going to be tough for them to get an equal say. You know, I think you can't have all these five leagues start the season at the same time because of, you know, TV contracts and trying to have to deal when to play certain games. So that certainly becomes the disadvantage for the Premier League to start so early. But for me, I think, you know, more than anything, I think it's more of an advantage to the other teams rather than the advantage to the Premier League, because they're able to get those players whenever they want before a certain amount of time. You know, they have much more time. They have 22 days, or in this case, 8 days if it's Italy, to get the players that they want. So that's the one thing that I look into when you're looking at to assess the fact that the transfer window is so staggered, and, you know, looking at the advantage and disadvantage of the leagues and the teams there.
See, for me, I'm with you. I feel that just on the surface, it's a little bit of a disadvantage to the Premier League. Not so much that, well, I mean, it's twofold. It's a disadvantage because, you know, those La Liga teams are still out in the open market. They can get a couple of matches under their belts. They can see what they need and maybe pick up a player from a non-Champions League team. So I'm looking at this strictly from the Barca, from the Valencia, from the Real Madrid, you know, and Atleti point of view, where let's say Diego Godin goes down injured, now I can scramble and I can go pick up a reasonable center back to help that cause. So I like the ability to be open at the same time, whereas I can improve my team after a couple of truly competitive games, where England really cannot. And I think for me that's part of the disadvantage for the English sides. The second part of the disadvantage for the English sides is just that I can't look at my team, you know, competitively and make a decision. So, you know, if all of a sudden Maurizio Sarri comes in after this first match with Chelsea and says, geez, you know, I really need a new left back. You know, this Marcos Alonso is not going to work out. Let's go get somebody, right? Then he can go out and do that if the window wasn't closed. But now you're kind of, you know, hand-tied, you know, because of that. So I like it as an advantage to the other teams. Now, granted, if I'm in La Liga, let's say I am Barcelona and I want to add somebody, and let's say I want to add Eden Hazard, right? I mean, well, let's look at it this way: Real Madrid, because Real Madrid's been rumored as a destination for Hazard for a while, right? So let's say, you know, Real Madrid really wants to pull that trigger. Do you really think Chelsea is going to part with him when they can't replace him? So even though England is shut down, it kind of in effect shuts down the market for many people because of the ability to move players in and out of very rich leagues. Do you know what I mean, Rob? So the English league, the EPL, is obviously the most expensive. It's the richest league, and because of that, it allows you know, for those player movements to happen, because obviously either they're overpaying or they're underselling their players, but they allow for it to happen. There's a lot of movement always. They're the biggest movers in the transfer window year in and year out. Italy, now, which will close second, has been the second biggest. So I think when you hit August 17th and the Serie A shuts down the window in 4 days, I think that's really going to be the effective end of the transfer window, despite the Bundesliga being open to the end of the month, despite La Liga being open to the end of the month. I mean, let's be realistic. Do you really think Bayern Munich is going to part with Robert Lewandowski, especially after the weekend he had? Going into Champions League, going into Pokal, going into the Bundesliga, they're not going to part with him without being able to provide a significantly reasonable and equal striker, and those are few and far between, and I don't know that person exists outside of those three leagues. So we'll have to see how it plays out, but I think that you'll see the transfer window start to quiet, even though we saw the Keita Baldi move earlier today. We've seen a couple of other moves happen, and I think there's still a couple rumored. You've also still got the Luka Modric thing that's kind of sitting out there, that whether it's going to happen or not, which wouldn't have involved England anyway. So I think there could be the potential for a couple of big moves, but I think the majority of them are kind of over and done with at this point because of the way the transfer window is being handled here. So interesting to see what happens, and we'll definitely get to it. So let's, Rob, let's get our guest in here and see if we can see if we can add her in to our phone call, and hopefully we'll get her added in quickly. And I know this is awfully loud, so I'm going to just
Hello,
Olivia. How are you tonight?
I'm good, thank you.
Good.
How are you?
Good, good. Welcome to the show, Olivia Buzzaglo from Premier League Productions. It's great to have you back. I'm going to open up the questioning real quick because obviously I'm going to take our focus to the EPL here. And we wrapped up week one of the Premier League. In your opinion, was there a player, a manager, or a team that exceeded your expectations in this first week? And was there one that fell well short of what you expected?
I don't think there were that many shocks. Like for the opening day, usually there's a shock defeat or something. But I'm not entirely sure I was sort of shocked by anyone or any team. I'm trying to think. Do you know, I think because of the transfer window, and people have good transfer windows and end up being rubbish, and people have rubbish transfer windows and end up being good. I think Everton, I know they went down to 10 men, and they're the team that, we saw this with them last season, that they had a great transfer window and ended up in the relegation zone. Just proves that sort of like transfer windows, even if you do go and buy loads of players, it's not necessarily going to turn out well. But that game against Wolves I thought was really, really good. I mean, Wolves I always expected to be that good. We've seen their team, we've seen they've got money, they've got Ruben Neves. I mean, he could be playing Champions League standard football. So, you know, they didn't surprise me. But that game I thought was a really good game. And Richarlison, obviously everyone's been talking about him and obviously costing a lot of money, but scoring two goals on your debut and was pretty good. But yeah, I can't pick one particular team or player. Ruben Neves obviously stood out, but I think everyone expected that. So not necessarily a surprise, but it was a great opening weekend of football.
You know, Olivia, I mean, obviously, to see the start of the Premier League season, you would think that there would be some sort of surprises coming in out of all the games, or at least from the history that we've seen of the Premier League. But this weekend, it was kind of a different story. I mean, you know, we did see a majority of the big teams and the contenders for not just the title, but obviously the top European spots, you know, get their wins. You know, we saw Manchester United defeat Leicester in their first match of the season, you know, with goals from Pogba and Luke Shaw. You know, we saw Spurs defeat Newcastle by the same score, with Dele Alli scoring, and who did an incredible hand gesture that I have no idea how you do, and it appears that it came from
another
dimension.
Oh, God, neither
do I.
I've been sitting there trying for ages.
I don't know how he does it.
I have no idea.
Magic. We saw Liverpool, you know, with their new look team, and they're really looking good. Defeat West Ham. You saw City defeat Arsenal in Unai Emery's first game. And obviously, you know, we did see Chelsea defeat Huddersfield 3-0. But, you know, I'll get to that game in particular in a few minutes. But I just want to talk about Manchester United, because obviously I think the result was a good one. You know, given the impressions and the expectations on them this season, you know, not a lot of that activity done in the transfer window. We saw Jose Mourinho react really bad to that, really negatively about that. But even though they did get the win there, the one thing that I do have a question, I'm sure you could definitely help me out with this one, is the Paul Pogba situation. Because, you know, there were some sort of rumors within the last few days and weeks of him possibly moving to Barcelona, and, you know, him giving a cryptic interview of him saying that if he says such things that he'll get fined. So I just want your thoughts on all that, because certainly it's kind of the norm, at least now in what we know, Jose Mourinho, of this famous third season implosion that he has. You know, we saw that with Chelsea, we saw that with Real Madrid. What do you think about all this? And, you know, would it be wise for Pogba to go? Because for me, I think when you're looking at Manchester United, you know, fighting for the Premier League, you know, fighting for the Champions League, and, you know, and for Pogba's case, as a wonderful midfielder that he is, it's going to be so tough for him to fight in that Barcelona midfield that is completely stacked with a lot of talent that got, you know, players like Vidal, Busquets, Rakitic, Malcolm, and so on and so forth. So I just want your thoughts on this.
I think Man United are a difficult one. I think Friday was a typical Jose Mourinho performance. They didn't necessarily play very well, but they got the 3 points. And I think we're going to be seeing a lot of that this season, the sort of not very nice football, but grinding out results. And as for Paul Pogba, he's a sort of player that needs freedom to sort of roam, and is you saw in the France squad, yes, he had someone like N'Golo Kante behind him, but he had that freedom, and you can see the player he turns into when he has that. But there's just something about him and Mourinho that doesn't quite, there's just something that's not right, that not quite there for them, which is disappointing for Pogba and for Mourinho, I imagine. I think it's going to be a very interesting like last few weeks, because obviously the transfer window in Europe is still open, which means Raiola seems to be sort of making Paul Pogba, trying to unsettle him a little bit. So, I mean, I imagine he just wants a payday, but it seems that those rumours to Barcelona or even going anywhere are just slightly becoming, sort of you're hearing more and more of them every day. I really like Paul Pogba. I think he's a great player, and I think he still has, he hasn't really reached his limit at Man United. He's been very inconsistent. When he's been good, he's been really good. Like you saw him in the Manchester derby last season. He was absolutely brilliant. So I just don't think Jose Mourinho is the right manager for him. He doesn't bring out the best in him, and he's still relatively young, but he's got to be playing attacking football. He's got to be given that freedom to roam, but Man United don't have the players behind him to allow him to do that. But as for Manchester United as a whole, I'm not sure about their squad this season. As you said, the transfer window hasn't been great. They bought Fred, looks okay, but I just think there was many more positions that they needed to strengthen in, and they haven't. It would be typical Mourinho to not have got his signings he wanted, to moan about it and then go and get in the top four. I don't think they'll be challenging for the title. I think that's between Man City and Liverpool for me. But yeah, I think top four, I still am not convinced about top four. Obviously, it helps that Chelsea and Arsenal both have new managers and trying to play football their own way. So that goes in their favour. But I'm not sure. Yeah, we're still starting to see the sort of little bits of Mourinho that's, yeah, as you said, happened at Real Madrid and Chelsea. So whether or not that's going to carry on, I mean, it started the season off well, but I cannot see that continuing, I don't think.
No, I mean, it's certainly early days to really talk about what Manchester United could do. And, you know, of course, with Mourinho, I mean, many people are already saying, because of the history that he has with other teams in obviously Chelsea, Real Madrid, that he could be indeed the first manager sacked because of the attitude that he imposes in that third season. And of course, in the whole situation that has been going on for Manchester United, just creates the perfect storm for him to leave so prematurely with a team that could indeed do something, although many, I would say, people don't believe so, but we just have to wait and see. Another team that hasn't done a lot of essentially none transfer business is Tottenham Hotspur. Obviously, they did come out with the win against Newcastle. But one thing that really surprised me, you know, they were the first team to ever, you know, not do any transfers in the summer window, I think since it was first imposed in, I believe, 2003. You know, there's been an ambition that Mauricio Pochettino is trying to do with this team. Obviously, you know, silverware is a must now, I think, given the expectations and really the whole look of the team. You know, you look at Harry Kane and him coming off a sensational Golden Boot performance at the World Cup. You know, I think his stock has never been much higher, and with other teams just trying to pounce on him before you know it. I mean, is this a case where, you know, for Spurs in particular, that this season is completely vital, not just for Harry Kane, but also for Pochettino, given the fact that, you know, if one season without silverware does indeed happen, that we could see one or both, you know, out the door and looking for new challenges? Or do you feel that there's still part of a process where they are looking to take it step by step and it needs a bunch of more time to achieve something?
I definitely think they're running out of time. I think they've had a while now to sort of gel as a team, and they've had this team for a while, and they were all very young. They're all like, Spurs have got a very, very, very strong first 11. But as you said, they didn't sign anyone. They haven't got a strong squad, which has always been their issue, and which is why, again, I don't think they'll win a trophy this season. I've been saying it, I said it last year. I said at the end of this season that if Spurs don't win anything this season, Poch, I think less likely, but Harry Kane will definitely go, because you can't have a player that good not winning anything. I think the same with Dele Alli. I think the same with Christian Eriksen. They're too good a player to not be winning trophies. And you look at the likes of Real Madrid that might come in for someone like Harry Kane. And like, why wouldn't he want to go there? I know they say they're loyal to Spurs, but there's only an amount of time that you can go and sort of, because they have been given a free pass effectively. Everyone's been saying, oh, but Spurs are young. Spurs haven't spent that much money compared to everyone else. But I think that time is coming to an end. And I think I honestly can't see them winning anything this season, because they're not going to be challenging for the title, because you need a strong squad. Everyone knows that. So that, I think that's out the question. But I think with Poch is, he always seems to aim high. He always seems to go Champions League, Premier League. Why not aim for the League Cup or the FA Cup? It's a trophy. like it's silverware. It doesn't matter what you win, unless it's a Community Shield, that doesn't count. But if it's the League Cup, the FA Cup, it doesn't matter what you win. It's that trophy, getting that first piece of silverware with this team, is so vitally important. And if they're gonna play their kids for those games and not take it seriously, then I think they're asking for the mass exodus next summer. They're bringing it on themselves. I don't think they've got much time left, and I'm not sure about Poch. I mean, there was links with him to Barcelona, but he's a very Espanol, isn't he? So not sure if that'll happen. But I can certainly see players like Dele Alli and Harry Kane leaving if they don't win anything this season.
I think it's for the best for their career as well. I mean, I think for them trying to better themselves as to be a top athlete or a top footballer, in the case of them, being one of the best English footballers in Premier League history, we don't know if that could happen. It's too premature to say, but certainly when you look at players like Harry Kane and the achievements that he's already done at his young age, that he's certainly on the path to do so, that I feel that if he's going to stay at Spurs and not get as much silverware that he does, why waste his time and where he could do it at another bigger club in England or hey, even try it out and break that stereotype of English or British players in general and try to do it abroad, do it in Italy or Spain or anything like that. And really, go from there. But certainly a team that certainly has had a wonderful transfer window is Liverpool. They did come off a wonderful 4-0 win against West Ham. And we saw the effects of the team that they had. They did bring in players like Keita, Fabinho, Shaqiri, Alisson, the goalkeeper. And when you're looking at a team that is, when they went to the Champions League final last year with the likes of players like Salah, Mane, Firmino, you look at players like Dejan Lovren, you look at Van Dijk, Alexander-Arnold looks like a really great player. I mean, certainly this team is for real. I mean, I've heard a lot of pundits say that they are indeed the team that they could finally, try to beat that really impossible, unstoppable team that is Manchester City. I just want your thoughts on that. And is this team for real? Is this team for real not just to win the Premier League, but certainly do well in the Champions League and, who knows, maybe go to another final?
Yeah, they sort of sorted out everything they needed to in the transfer window. I mean, Keita looked amazing in his first game against West Ham. Alisson didn't have very much to do, but he was, they sort of picked out their areas of weakness and they've sort of gone, right, we're just going to spend the money and that's what they needed to do, carry us in the Champions League final, and they can't afford to let that happen again. I do think City and Liverpool will be the top two. For me, City just still have that edge. But you never know. I think this Liverpool team needs to be judged. I mean, 4-0 against West Ham was a great performance, but they've put four past West Ham in each of the last four times they played them, I think. So I don't think that's too much to judge, but they've got very, very good fixtures. I think their first game is Tottenham, which is now back at Wembley. It was meant to be at Tottenham's new ground, but obviously that's been pushed back. That's their first big game, and that's not until mid-September. So they've really got a chance to City have as well, so it looks like it will be those two. But they've really got a chance to sort of put themselves out there and be like to City. We are here and we are gonna fight you for the title, because I can't really see anyone else doing it. I think Liverpool are the team I think Liverpool fans are getting slightly carried away with the whole it's our year. I think we've still got to judge them on 10 or 15 games in. But for sure they do look the real deal and they've improved in every way they needed to. I'm still going City, but they'll definitely be up there for sure.
No, absolutely. I think for me and Joe, I think we did pick Liverpool to win the Premier League. I mean, certainly it is a bold thing to say, considering the fact that Manchester City has been just so dominant that they could indeed win not just the Premier League, but also the treble and other various tournaments. It wouldn't be surprising also if Liverpool would win this Premier League. I think they have the team to do it. You look at the depth that they have and, who knows what could happen in this, as unpredictable as we hope that it could be this season and not just something that we saw Manchester City just run away with it last year. Yeah. But certainly, speaking of Manchester City, they did, very impressively beat Arsenal in Unai Emery's first Premier League game. I mean, looking there, I mean, it's going to be hard for anyone to stop this team moving forward. But, do you feel that, I'll do it more of a two-part question. For Arsenal first, I mean, it's going to be hard for anyone to try to replace such a emblematic figure like Arsene Wenger, who's been in charge for so long. I think Unai Emery just getting the stick from Arsenal fans, even looking at the blasphemous stuff of saying Unai Emery out this early, is just blasphemy. Like, I don't know why such things could happen. But, you know, I think for me, this Arsenal team does need a little bit of time. You know, certainly they are still contending for the Europa League. I think they do have the team to do it. When you look at the transfers that they made and the team that they do have, you know, I think it's tough to see them really contend for this Premier League title, given the amount of teams that are up there. With that in case of with that in mind, it is Manchester City. That is the team that, you know, is miles ahead of everyone else. I just want your thoughts on, you know, the whole match in itself and, you know, where both the teams stand heading into what could be a really interesting season for both of them.
Yeah, I'll start with City because I got less to say about City because I think when we played them in the Europa League, they were pretty, like, they're just, obviously Guardiola, it's been a work in progress and they've been together for 2 years and you can definitely tell that. Even when you try and press them high, they play out so easily in between you, and it's just they're just brilliant to watch. And that game against Arsenal, they didn't even look like they got out of like the first gear. They just looked so comfortable. They never really looked like conceding. They were just dominant from the start to the finish. And I think they'll take some stopping again this season. They did that without two of their best players in David Silva and Kevin De Bruyne. So I mean, it's just scary that the gears I think they could go up to with their best players. And you just think how that's what I think will get them over the line is their squad. You look at Liverpool's squad and it's not half as strong as like Liverpool bring on Shaqiri and Lallana and City bring on Sane and do you know what I mean? There's just a big difference in the class of their squads, and that's why I think City will win the league. But going back to that Arsenal game, yeah, they were brilliant from start to finish. And Arsenal, I think, is a difficult one because yeah, you can't judge Unai Emery on one game. You're playing the champions, you're playing the best team. You're not going to be playing City every week. What I would say is Guendouzi, the 19-year-old midfield, yeah, he made a few mistakes, but he did look really solid. And I think him and Torreira could be a very, very good centre midfield. But I think Emery's got to sort of swerve away from the old sort of Wenger decisions like Xhaka. I don't think he should be playing centre midfield. And also, I'm not convinced with Socrates, their new signing. Obviously, it's difficult to judge. He's only played one game, but he's played probably against one of the best attacks in the league. But I think it's going to take a while for Emery to sort of bring his style of football and the tactics and the way he wants to play. But Arsenal, their attack is pretty good. You look at Aubameyang, Lacazette, Ozil, a bit non-existent in the game against City, but Mkhitaryan, they've all got the potential to show up and to actually put in performances that can bring Arsenal like wins against the top six, which haven't come by at all. Their record against the top six is very poor. I still think they'll be fifth or sixth place. I can't see them getting into the Champions League. But you know, I think it's going to take time, and I think we've got to be patient. I think Arsenal fans have got to be patient as well because, you know, I mean, Wenger's left. He left, and he was there 22 years. Someone's not going to come in overnight, and it's going to change philosophy and change sort of like the way the club's been playing football and stuff like that. And I think it will take time. But I think Emery's a good manager, and they've had an okay transfer window. What I would say is that I feel like they've been buying Europa League standard players, not Champions League standard players. I mean, I don't think anyone, apart from Aubameyang in January, which is a great signing, like none of their signings have jumped out at me and been like, you're like a world-class player. And yeah, I think this season's going to be like a transition season for Arsenal, as much as it is Chelsea and all those teams that have new managers. It's not going to click straight away. But I do believe we'll be seeing a better Arsenal than what we've seen over the past few years under Wenger.
Oh, definitely a new look team, you know, with essentially a winner like Unai Emery. I mean, you know, you don't win three Europa Leagues and not be considered that kind of a caliber manager. So I think it all takes time, and you know, Arsenal fans have to be patient at this point. You know, they can't really do anything about it, and certainly we just have to wait what goes on from there. And with City, I mean, they're just, you know, unstoppable. I mean, I just don't see anyone really stopping this team, bar Liverpool. It's tough for them to anyone to stop them.
Yeah.
But going now to my final question of the night, I would say, and I had the pleasure of going to the stadium a couple of days ago at Stamford Bridge. It was fantastic. I didn't go to the interior, but I did see the outside, and I think that was enough for me to be really amazed of how great of a stadium it is. But it's Chelsea, obviously, you know, new look team as well with the with the inclusion of Mauricio Sarri as the new manager, you know, they will be playing in Europa League. And, you know, some of the impressions that I got of that game against Huddersfield, you know, I think obviously from the sensational performances that we saw from Conte and Jorginho in that midfield, and, you know, the addition of a player like Kovacic, I think just makes it much more stronger than what we've seen in past years. I think that with a player like Alvaro Morata, you know, it's positive. Yes, certainly he is going to get a lot of stick this season given the kind of performance that he had last season, but I feel that this season would be something special for him. I think, you know, I think he has the quality to do it. I don't understand how much criticism, I don't understand the criticism that he gets at times, but I think he's a quality player. I think the defenders were all solid, but, you know, certainly has a lot of work to do. But certainly, I think the expectations could be decent enough for the Chelsea seed. I mean, you know, they certainly did pick up a few key players in that case of Kovacic and Jorginho. Yeah. But I just want your thoughts on, you know, the game against Huddersfield. And, you know, moving forward, you know, it's going to be tough for them to really contend for that title, but certainly he'd have the quality to fight for those Champions League spots and also definitely become one of the favorites for the Europa League. I mean, what are your thoughts, Olivia, on this and the game in general against Huddersfield and, of course, the season that we are hoping to see?
Yeah, I thought the Huddersfield game was good. And maybe it wasn't as comfortable as sort of the scoreline led everyone to believe at halftime, 2-0 up. The second half, Huddersfield weren't very good. We were good. And you saw glimpses of Sarri's style of football and the quick passing and the high press and stuff like that. And as like Arsenal, it's obviously going to take time. You're never going to be able to, because effectively we are changing a whole philosophy. Chelsea have never played this free-flowing attacking football. We've always had the big strong striker up front, and set pieces have always, like, you know, so it is going to be a difficult season, and it will be a long season, I think, for Chelsea fans. But we have to be patient, and yes, the club aren't necessarily the best for patience. But I think in that Huddersfield game, I did enjoy watching it, and it's got Chelsea fans excited again. It's got Chelsea fans excited for the next game. They want it to come sooner than sort of a week away, which is nice. As for the season, being in the Europa League, I think is good. There's good and bad points being in the Europa League. I'm not sure whether it's a good idea to play the kids. And then when we get to the latter stages, then it starts, because I think our kids and half of our first team will play. But it's sort of one of those competitions that might hinder our chances of fighting for a title. And I'm not saying we're going to fight for the Premier League title, because I don't think Chelsea will this season. But we want to make sure we get in the top four. And whether that be via the Europa League, taking that seriously, or via the Premier League, we've got two good options. We are probably the strongest team in it at the moment, us and Arsenal. But I think, yeah, I'm very, very happy with Chelsea signings. As you said, Jorginho and Kante are just a ridiculous midfield. And when you add Kovacic to that, it's just, you know, it's just that football that sort of everyone's wanted to see at Stamford Bridge for such a long time is slowly starting to happen. And I think his team selection is still going to be interesting. I still don't think he's worked out what his best 11 is. I think the centre-back pairings, not an issue, but I think that's one where he has to look out, because I think he's picking David Luiz at the moment because he's probably better for the quick flowing, like passing football, which David Luiz is very, very good at. Being Brazilian, he's a very good passer of the ball, and his technique's brilliant as well. And that's why I think Alonso's in there. But I personally prefer Christensen. I think he's young. I think he's a brilliant defender. And I think Sarri's going to have to take a few games for him to work out what his best 11 is. Hopefully not going anywhere. It doesn't look like he is. I think that's probably the biggest signing of them all. If he signs a new contract, which hopefully he does, would be the equivalent of buying another world-class player. That's the most important thing for that. I think keeping hold of Kante and Hazard. Courtois was fine. I think everyone was happy to let him go. He wanted to go. But I think I'm as interested as everyone else for this season. I haven't got any high expectations because it is a transition season. I'm just excited to see that free-flowing football back at Stamford, or not back at Stamford Bridge, at Stamford Bridge. And it's going to be an interesting season. But as I said, Chelsea fans have to have patience with Sarri, and we've seen little glimpses so far. And I think everyone's excited again. So no expectations for this season. A good European run, and I think top four is our most realistic aims. But yeah, I think like most Chelsea fans, I'm excited.
Now, Olivia, I want to jump in here quick because I do want to ask you quickly about Thibaut Courtois. For me, that situation ended kind of
sourly. You know what I mean? There was running jokes on Twitter for a few days about where in the world is Thibaut Courtois because he didn't show up, basically forcing, you know, strong-handing the move to Real Madrid. In your opinion, was that whole situation handled poorly? And who do you blame if you do feel that it was handled poorly?
It was handled very poorly, I think, from the start. I think initially he was going to sign a new contract and that didn't happen for whatever reason. But I think he always sort of put forward his belief that he told the club that he wanted to go. And I don't know whether I obviously don't know. We don't know the ins and outs. We just know that Thibaut Courtois tried to force through a move. He didn't turn up to training, which I think is disrespectful. He's under contract. It's a new manager. You turn up for work if you're under contract. I think it was handled poorly by both parties. I think we should like draw a line under the Courtois situation. He's gone to Real Madrid. He wanted to go to Real Madrid. We've got in a young goalkeeper. But I just think it was a bit disrespectful. It didn't look good. You know, when you don't turn up to training, you're hiding away in somewhere like Tenerife to try and force through a move when the manager's openly said, I want you to come back and tell me face to face that you want to leave. But he's gone now. Chelsea fans are going to, I think they've already forgotten about him. And we're going to put all of our focus onto Kepa. And hopefully he sort of emulates what Petr Cech did at the club. That would be nice.
Now Kepa comes in. He brings a little bit of a different style of goalkeeping to the mix here, where Thibaut Courtois was really much more of a shot stopper. Kepa's a little bit better with his feet. He's a little more dynamic. He's younger. You know, but obviously he came with a significant price tag. Do you feel it was money well spent, or do you think for that kind of money they could have gotten somebody else?
I think it was left a little bit too late, and it makes me think that if you're going to go and spend $71 million on he's a relatively unknown goalkeeper compared to other goalkeepers out there. If you're going to go and spend £71 million on him, why not go fully in for Alisson, who was available? That's why I do think it was. We're going to have to see if it was money well spent, aren't we? Because I don't think many people know too much about him. And playing in the Spanish league is very different to playing in the Premier League. So he obviously suits Sarri's style of play, playing out from the back. He obviously likes doing that. We'll see how he is with set plays and stuff like that. But I mean, I think all these questions about his price tag, it's not his fault. It's not his fault. All he can do is perform on the pitch. He didn't have a lot to do against Huddersfield, but the real test will be Arsenal, because that's a very good attack they've got. I think we'll see. I mean, hopefully he's money well spent. He's a very young goalkeeper. As much as Thibaut Courtois was good for us over the years, I don't think it will take much for Chelsea fans to sort of love Kepa and to sort of, he won't have to do very much to sort of get in their good books. So I think everyone was a bit sick of Courtois and sort of the way the situation was handled. Hopefully it's money well spent, but we're just going to have to wait and see.
Surely. My last question for the night before we let you go is I want to look back on Maurizio Sarri. Obviously, one of the biggest quote-unquote transfers Chelsea made this summer was to bring in Sarri and Jorginho as kind of a package deal. How do you rate Sarri's performance, especially given the fact that he really only had this team 3 days before the match? And a follow-up question is, did the Premier League start a little too soon, where we're seeing players are not ready, they're not fresh, and coaches really haven't had a chance to manage those teams and get a good feel for them? Did they start too soon?
I'm very impressed with Sarri. I think it was a bold move by the club, considering he hasn't won very much he hasn't won anything in Italy. Obviously two second place finishes, one third, I think, in Serie A. So he obviously plays a great attacking brand, and that's what they brought to the club. So I think it is a bold move. I think it is a bold move by the club, but hopefully that pays off. And regarding the World Cup, I do think the Premier League started too soon. I can't understand why it would have started that soon, because we haven't got a tournament next summer. We could have just delayed it a little bit. And he's done well. Emery's done well. All those managers that are new have had 2 weeks with this team, and even days with some players. I know we had an easy game in the Huddersfield game, but he's done everything he can with this team, and it is going to take some time for Sarri or whatever they call it to kick in. I do think it started too early, and some players do look a bit rusty, look like they have just come back from the World Cup. But I think hopefully in they'll learn from this, and in a few years' time, it'll start later and sort of finish later, because that sort of seems the most logical thing to do. But yeah, hopefully we all see the best of Chelsea's attacking football and Mauricio Sarri's effect very soon.
Olivia, I just want to jump in real quick before we let you go, but I just want, you know, we did our Premier League preview just a couple weeks ago regarding this. I just want your thoughts on who do you think the top five will be at the end of the season?
The top five?
Yes.
Man City, Liverpool will be top two. I'm going to go Man City to win the league and Liverpool to come second. I don't believe Arsenal will be in the top five. So it's between Chelsea, Tottenham and Man United to battle out for those last two top four spaces. Obviously, it's going to be very dependent on, obviously, the Europa League isn't going to help Chelsea. Tottenham's squad's very thin. So if one of their first team players gets injured, that could cause a lot of damage to them. So I just think with Sarri, it's obviously going to be difficult. We don't know how long it's going to take for his tactics and his style of football to sort of for Chelsea's players to start playing it like you want. But I think Mourinho's always sort of grind out results no matter if you don't play well. And as I said at the start, I think we're going to be seeing a lot of that this season. And it wouldn't surprise me if they get in the top four and don't really play well over the whole season. But yeah, I top two I can call, sixth place I can call, but three, four, and five, one of those teams is going to miss out, and I don't have a clue which one.
Yeah, and last question, you know, because we did predictions like that on our show. Top goal scorer, is it going to be Mo Salah, Harry Kane, somebody else? Who do you think?
Obviously, Salah and Kane, I think, are going to be up there. But I'm really excited to see Aubameyang this year. I loved him when he played for Dortmund. I always watched them, and I just thought he was absolutely brilliant. And I think he's going to be one to watch this season. I'm not sure about him playing on the left. I think he's much more effective as a striker. But I think we're going to be seeing more of him when Emery wants to go two up or like bring Lacazette on. And we are going to see Aubameyang on the left. But he's my one to watch this season. I think he could be the striker that everyone's in for Dortmund. How good and how clinical and how quick and how he's just brilliant. And I think we're going to see that in the Premier League this season.
And one more question, of course. Can either of those teams, especially City or Liverpool, win the Champions League this year?
Absolutely. I mean, I can't see why not. You look at Liverpool getting to the final last year, City playing Liverpool in the semi-finals. They've both got strong enough. Like, Liverpool's obviously first team will blow teams away and City's squad will blow teams away. It's going to be interesting, obviously, with Ronaldo at Juventus, because they, every time in the Champions League, they miss it by one little thing. Like, there's just one little bit missing. Ronaldo could be that man to go and win the Champions League for Juventus. Obviously, PSG I'm not so convinced about, but there's absolutely no reason why one of City or Liverpool can't win the Champions League. I think they've both got the squad, they've both got the manager, they've both got the style of football. So I think it's going to be an interesting Champions League this season.
No doubt about it. Olivia, thank you for giving us so much time tonight. We really appreciate you coming on, especially with week one of the EPL season in the books, and we look forward to having you again very, very soon.
Thank you very much. It was lovely to be here.
All right, talk soon.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
See you later. Bye.
And that was Olivia Buzaglo. I will get my man, Mr. Rojas, back in here because Skype is terrible lately. Now Mr. Rojas is back in. And fantastic to catch up with Olivia and really get the lowdown into week one of the Premier League season, Rob. Let's jump into a couple of things that we want to talk about this week. You know, obviously we've talked about the transfer window stuff again. Probably one of the topics I want to talk about, Rob, because it happened while we were away. And I want to jump to the Barcelona topic. Obviously, Barca a few weeks ago steals Malcolm from going to Roma. Now, over the past week, steals Arturo Vidal, who was slated to go to Inter. They jump in last minute again and steal a player going to going to another team. Is it dirty pool, Rob, what they did? And they've done it twice. I mean, and can anyone really trust Barca? Moving forward in any future transfer windows?
No, I mean, I think this is something normal that we've seen. I think the famous example would be Real Madrid, but certainly this isn't something new that we see, especially with the bigger clubs, at least with the more financial backing like Barcelona. I think this is the norm. I don't think it's anything new that we saw, but I think when it comes to Barcelona, they're certainly looking into the future. You know, the post Andres Iniesta factor, you look at Lionel Messi being the new captain of the team, You know, certainly it's a new generational change, I would say, under Ernesto Valverde, that they're really focusing for the future. Of course, Vidal isn't exactly that kind of player, given the age that he's at. But, you know, with players like Malcolm, like Artur, Coutinho, you know, with other players like Dembele, Umtiti, you know, they still... And, of course, selling off players like Yerry Mina, who, you know, unfortunately couldn't stay at Barcelona too long and had to go to Everton. But with other players also going out the door as well, I think they're mainly focusing on the future. But I think the whole stealing and poaching from other clubs isn't exactly... I think the old joke is it's probably revenge for what we saw at, in the Champions League, isn't it, Joe?
Yeah. You know, I get that feeling, but it's just, you know, it's amazing to see them do it once and get the reaction that they got in the football world was one thing. To see them do it again, I thought was quite unusual. But they've pulled it off again, and we'll see what happens, you know, from there. One other thing I want to talk about quick, and I know it's not on our plan, and I know we're gonna cut our plan a little short tonight. You know, let's get some obviously we've talked about our impressions we've talked about quite a few of our impressions on the EPL for week one with Olivia, as we just had her on. But Rob, give me like one of your takeaways from week one in England, you know, your thoughts on the weekend.
You know, like I said to Olivia, I think it was more kind of expected, I would say. I think with the exception of the Arsenal game, you know, who did take on Manchester City, I think it was the more expected types of results. Given to the big teams, or at least the teams contending for the European spots, you know, with Manchester United winning, with Spurs winning, Chelsea, you know, Liverpool, City. I think the one thing that I was impressed of is that wonderful game between Wolverhampton and Everton. You know, we did see the likes of players like Ruben Neves and Richarlison, you know, being those star players. And, you know, with the team that they have, the money that they're getting, you know, obviously Wolverhampton coming back to the Premier League with all that new money that they have. Everton are building a really good team, I would say, under a coach like Marco Silva. You know, it's certainly not really anything surprising. I think it's, you know, obviously early days to see what we can assess from such a, we would hope, would be an amazing season. But I think early impressions are that, you know, we're kind of seeing the effects of the teams that did spend well in the transfer window really pull it off with great results. And it's going to be now the case of how far they can go. I mean, yeah, this whole thing of not getting any more players to join their team with the transfer window closing and that whole thing of players that could indeed leave to other teams across the Europe. Yeah, I think that's going to be the big thing to see within the next, I believe, 2 or 3 weeks before the international break. You know, what we'll have to see from there. That's another thing, too, how this international break affects some teams, that it could indeed be an interesting season and hopefully an entertaining one as compared to what we saw last year.
Yeah, no, I agree. For me, you know, the couple of takeaways that I saw, one of them you kind of touched on a little bit with Olivia, that was one of the impressions that I had watching Arsenal play this weekend, is they looked very Wenger-ish. Do you know what I mean? Where they,
yeah.
There was no, I'd say about the first maybe 30 minutes of the match, they really looked like they were back on their heels. They were not attacking. It wasn't fluid. It got better as the match went on. But to me, they opened like Wenger would have opened, and I thought that was unfortunate. I thought, you know, I'm hoping to see out of Emery over the next few weeks that kind of that mentality changes in the players, and they move forward. I think bringing in a kid like Torreira is probably going to be better served under Emery, where, you know, if he starts him, he gets him out on the pitch early. I think the kid can do damage. So it's going to be interesting for me to see how that translates. And then I think I've got to tell you, one of the steals of the transfer window and one of the biggest moves I think we're going to talk about when the season's over is Naby Keita coming from RB Leipzig to Liverpool. He was man of the match for me, Rob, on the weekend. He was unbelievable. And he was that link-up piece, that composed link-up piece. Like for me, when you watched Liverpool last year, it was, you know, they were able to get it up and down the wings. It was hair on fire. It was fast, high pressing. I mean, it was high energy. It was very Jurgen Klopp-ish. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But yesterday or on the weekend, there was a change. It was much more composed. It was much more lethal.
And I think that was because the play, for the most part, went through Naby Keita so much that that he brought that calmness to the match, and was just precise like a surgeon, in how he handled that team. So I think Naby Keita, when all is said and done, we're going to look at that kid and we're going to say that was the transfer of the window for the EPL, because he just gives that extra dimension that Liverpool need. And I got to tell you, watching him this weekend made me feel really good about us picking Liverpool to win the title, to be honest with you. So.
I mean, it's still early days, but yeah, I mean, I think we saw the talent that he was able to do at Leipzig, and I think early showings of what he's been able to do at Liverpool are looking really good for him.
Oh, sure, no doubt about it. Now, looking back on the French League this weekend, just as a quick aside there, obviously with PSG doing what they did this weekend, I think I want to say it was a 3-0 victory over Cannes, which was totally expected. It was one-way traffic there. Lyon Amiens was much more competitive, Rob, than I thought it was going to be. Lyon, for the most part, controlled that particular matchup with Traore there, lending the striking duties, including a really nice goal in the first half. But Amiens showed me a little bit more than what I thought you would typically see out of them. The other one that I want to talk about is on Friday. Marseille was just one-way traffic against Toulouse, Rob. Dimitri Payet, if I remember correctly, two goals on the weekend. So just a fantastic performance by them. I think we had Marseille picked to be third in the league, if I remember correctly. I'd have to go back and look at
the list. I think it was second, if I'm not mistaken.
I wasn't sure if it was second or third, but I know that we talked about them fighting for those Champions League spots, and their performance on the weekend was phenomenal. So I like that. Also, going back to Lyon, they've really got to do something about that pitch, man. I know the match was broadcast on BN. I know they talked about the pitch a lot, but Rob, pitch was coming up as people were running, as players were running. It wasn't even like the hard tackles or the slides or anything like that. It was just physically running from point A to point B. Pitch was getting dug up constantly, and it's a hybrid surface there, but they've really got to do something about it, because that was, for me, that was awful.
It's a new stadium as well. I mean, you would think that they would have the money, or at least the whole kind of innovation to try to fix such a stadium, for that to never happen.
Absolutely, no doubt about it. So it'll be interesting to see how they move on from there. But I thought overall in Ligue 1 for the weekend, the good teams did what they had to do. The PSGs, the Monacos beating Nantes 3-1, the Marseilles, the Lyons, everything kind of went as expected. And it's going to be interesting to see as we move into the season, when these teams start to meet each other, how they face off against each other. Because I think Monaco, like we talked about in our preview show with Eric Devine, was Monaco's weekend, right? They had another fire sale year, 2 years in a row. We saw what that did to teams like Marseille, where Marseille struggled for a couple of years after they had their fire sale a few years ago. But now they're back. And it's going to be interesting to see how quickly Monaco can return from this. Lyon doing Lyon things, and PSG, again, dominant as you would expect. And again, with PSG, didn't even have their full side. Buffon was tested a couple of times in this match too, Rob. I don't know if you saw that, but
yeah, I did.
But the old man hasn't lost a step, and it was, I almost forgot that he was the goalkeeper for the team when he made that first save on that dipping volley. I said to myself, "Oh wow, Areola made the nice save there." And then all of a sudden, I look, I'm like, "Wait a minute, that's not Areola. What are you talking about?" So,
and then also, we need to mention our own kid. Our own pride and joy.
Yeah, Timothy Weah comes on, right, as a sub in the match. I'm actually looking up the specs right now, the stats. Comes in the 82nd minute, and then the 89th minute has a nice finish, to score a goal as well. Who needs Kylian Mbappe, right?
who needs Edinson Cavani at this point? But, yeah, I think I'm happy for him. I think he made the front cover l'équipe today, actually. So that's really very good for him, I would say. But, I think this is a case where, manager like Tuchel, who's really focused on youth. I think with that experience, that I think we're going to see a lot of Timothy Weah this season.
And you think about it, with Mbappe out, he wasn't ready yet to be on the starting 11. He wasn't even on the bench. Cavani was out with a calf injury that he suffered in the World Cup. They were missing a couple of pieces here. Dani Alves, Levan Kurzawa, Marco Verratti were all out with injuries. So you know, this team was dominant, and you forget how deep they really are. So, you know, as we talked about before, this is another team that, come Champions League time, is going to be very dangerous to, you know,
definitely
to handle. So, let's give some matches to watch this week, Rob. In Ligue 1, you know, and obviously we're looking 2 weeks ahead because we're off next week. In Ligue 1 on Saturday the 18th at 11 a.m., you've got Guingamp at home to PSG. In the EPL on Saturday the 18th, and we're going to call this one our match of the week, by the way, it's going to be Chelsea-Arsenal Saturday on the 18th at 12:30 p.m. At 2:30 p.m., we've got Serie A kicking off their season with Lazio facing Napoli. We also have the debut on the 18th as well of Cristiano Ronaldo at Juventus playing Chievo. MLS on Sunday the 19th, you have Atlanta United, Columbus, battle of top two top teams in the Eastern Conference there. And then we fast forward to the 20th on Monday, with Valencia and Atletico Madrid facing off at 2 p.m. That's going to open the La Liga season. Bundesliga waits one more week on Sunday the 26th at noon. You're going to have Borussia Dortmund playing RB Leipzig, and then we will be back again on the 27th. Rob, let's go back to the trivia question. I'll give it to you real quick.
Yep. All right.
Since 2007-2008, can you name the top four players that have scored the most free kicks in the top five leagues and Champions League combined?
All right, so I think the two obvious ones, and I would hope one of them is on this list, or not both. You know, I think these are the two obvious ones. Is the first? I'm going to give you the first one. Is it Lionel Messi?
Lionel Messi's number two on this list at 28 goals.
Okay. My second option is obviously Cristiano Ronaldo.
He's number one on this list. 40 goals since 2007-2008 from free kicks.
Now this is the hard one. Who's good at free kicks? I'm trying to think of good free kick takers. Is Neymar there?
No, he's not.
He's not. That's a good question. Can I get a hint?
I'm trying to think of a good hint to give. I'll tell you what. The last two players on this list, at one time or another, have played for Juventus.
Dybala?
Dybala is not on this list.
Have played for Juventus.
Or still play. Either have played or still play for Juventus.
Oh, Pjanic?
Miralem Pjanic is third on the list, 18 goals. You've got one more.
One more. Oof.
And possibly the one guy that, if you had a contest, he would be in your top three or four to take free kicks historically ever.
Is he retired?
He is.
He is. Duh. Andrea Pirlo.
The metronome himself, 15 goals, fourth on the list. So your top four players since 2007-2008, CR7 with 40 goals, Lionel Messi, 28 goals, Miralem Pjanic, 18 goals, and Andrea Pirlo, 15 goals from the free kick spot. You know, fantastic little question there. And again, that is from Footy Room, so if the information's wrong, call them, don't call me.
Yep.
So, Rob, you know, with everything off the docket, let's hit the closing music.
Yep, sounds good.
Let's do it. So, and it may seem a little rushed tonight, but right now, you know, we've got some news about of one of our great, great friends of the show, Mr. Jim Hart. You know, he's not doing well tonight. So, our thoughts and prayers are out to him and his family. He's a wonderful person. He's an inspiration to us, and we hope nothing but for the best for him. But Jimmy, you know, we're thinking about you.
Definitely.
So again, for episode 214 of Low Limit Football, thanks again to Olivia Buzzaglo from Premier League Productions for joining us. We are off next week, by the way. We return on August 27th, and on the 27th, we have our guest lined up already, but we're not going to announce it because we have a major, major announcement for Low Limit Football coming up on the 27th, and our guest is going to help us make that announcement. Rob, very excited for the future for you and I and this podcast for sure. So, again,
definitely,
for episode 214 of Low Limit Football, I am Joe Uccello.
I'm Roberto Rojas.
Thanks for listening, everyone, and good night.